From WILL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Farrah Anderson. It's Tuesday, November 7th. Coming up, we'll learn more about class sharing that happens more frequently at smaller, often rural schools. That story is coming up in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Illinois lawmakers head back to Springfield this week to finish up their fall veto session with several big issues still on the table. Alex Degman reports.
It still remains to be seen whether lawmakers will try to override Governor J.B. Pritzker's veto on a measure that would lift the state's moratorium on construction of nuclear facilities. They might instead try to pass a new measure filed last month that addresses the governor's objections. Legislators could consider extending the Invest in Kids Act, which offers income tax credits to people who make donations to scholarship-granting organizations. Critics say it takes money away from public schools. It's set to expire at the end of the year. They could also continue work on measures that would allow state legislative employees to unionize, set district boundaries for the elected Chicago School Board, and extend enhanced penalties for repeat gun offenders. I'm Alex Degman.
A Bishop Hill nonprofit organization says there are major concerns about the condition of state-owned historic buildings at the Western Illinois site. Jane Carlson tells us what the organization is trying to do.
The Preserve Bishop Hill Corporation was founded a couple years ago. Its mission is to support the state's presence in town and come up with ideas for alternative revenue streams to fund restoration of state-owned buildings like the Colony Church.
What you see is rotting clapboard siding, sills that are rotten, windows that are falling, just a depressed look.
That's Courtney Stone, who founded the nonprofit after circulating an online petition that called attention to the deferred maintenance in the village. Bishop Hill was founded in 1846 by Swedish immigrants as a utopian community. Today, it's a community of under 150 that depends heavily on tourism. And Stone says there's a clear difference between the state-owned historic sites in Bishop Hill and those managed by other organizations.
Bishop Hill is square, but this is a ribbon going from north to south, bisecting the entire town. You can't go anywhere without seeing or walking through state property. That affects tourism. People see that, and when they don't see a town looking prosperous, they question whether they should go back.
The state-owned properties are managed as the Bishop Hill State Historic Site under the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, which is part of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. And there's an estimated $1 billion in deferred maintenance for historic sites and parks across the state. Stone says his organization is coordinating with lawmakers and DNR administration to make restoration efforts in Bishop Hill a reality.
It was very clear to me the way into all this would be to create relationships, recreate them, reaffirm them so that they don't forget who we are.
The Preserve Bishop Hill Corporation also aims to support programming in town. They will host their first event on Saturday afternoon at the state-operated Bishop Hill Museum, with paintings by Olaf Kranz on display and music by classical guitarist Cole Shuda. The event runs from 1 to 3. I'm Jane Carlson.
The Fighting Illini men's basketball team won their season opener against the Eastern Illinois Panthers Monday night 80-52. IPM News reporter Colin Highslope has more.
For the second straight year, the Illini have opened up their season with a win against Eastern Illinois. The Illini defense held the Panthers to just 29% shooting in the 28-point win. Head coach Brad Underwood spoke after the game about the struggles of the Illini starters.
Perform. Play good. Play better. You want to play? Play better. You want to play? Do what we're supposed to do. You want to play? Practice better.
Illinois will host Oakland next on Friday, November 10th, at 7 p.m. and will be available to stream on Big Ten Plus. I'm Colin Highslope, IPM News.
Still to come, we'll learn more about class sharing that happens more frequently at smaller, often rural schools. That story is next on 217 Today.
The 21st is where Illinois gathers for news, information, and daily conversation on politics, the pandemic, culture, and everything in between. I'm Brian Mackey, inviting you to join the conversation anytime, day or night, by leaving us a voicemail. The number is 217-300-2121, and we might play it on air. Then tune in Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. on AM 580 and 6 p.m. on FM 90.9.
This is 217 Today, I'm Farrah Anderson. Schools have a lot to offer. Classes, special education programs, sports, support for mental health, and so much more. But what about small schools that can't offer everything? Many smaller, often rural schools resort to one of the first lessons they teach, sharing. Peter Medlin reports.
Jennifer Wald starts her day teaching exploratory and intro to agriculture at the Leland School District, a small rural district in LaSalle County, and she teaches both middle and high school. Then, after a few classes, she gets in her car and drives 6 miles east to teach more high school ag and advise the FFA club at the Samanok School District. Wald is a shared teacher, and she wears both a Leland and Samanok lanyard to prove it.
It's interesting because it's 7 minutes apart, but it is a completely different dynamic.
Shared teacher setups like this aren't very common, but Leland and Samanok already work together, so it made sense. They share sports teams and a food vendor. In fact, Leland and Samanok almost completely consolidated last year. The districts also share classes, like agriculture, so when Wald comes to Samanok, so do some of her Leland High School students. In fact, students from a third district, Sandwich, also come to Samanok for ag. It allows those districts to offer their students classes like plant science, food science, and ag mechanics that they otherwise couldn't. Class sharing does happen more frequently at smaller, often rural schools. Tim McConnell is the principal at Erie High School, a northern Illinois school about 20 minutes from the Mississippi River. They've had a sports co-op with nearby Prophetstown High School since the late 90s. But 5 years ago, they expanded the co-op to include everything, sports, activities, and academics. McConnell says the decision made a lot of sense for both sides, especially considering one factor.
Well, our school enrollments, both in Prophetstown and in Erie, are steadily declining. So when I came here 22 years ago, as the principal, we were at 250, and now we're down to 190.
The districts build their schedules together, so if an Erie student wants to take a class that their school doesn't offer, they can take it at Prophetstown, and vice versa. They both offer dual credit opportunities students at either district can take. McConnell says as enrollment at districts like Erie shrink, and it becomes more difficult to hire certain teaching positions, arrangements like this are going to become even more common.
This type of education is going to only have to expand, or, you know, students are going to be left without. And so people need to get on board with it and not be afraid of it. It's easy to do if you, you know, have the passion to get it done.
Brian Dukes is the superintendent of the Earlville School District in LaSalle County, and he says collaboration is one of the most valuable tools he has in education. He'll borrow a good idea from anywhere. Earlville works with other districts on curriculum and various school programs. They also share school support staff with neighboring districts. For example, they've had a hard time filling their school psychologist position, so now they share a psychologist with two other districts. The district also shares a school resource officer and a special education coordinator, too. Duke says it allows them to maintain high-quality services and save some money.
I think it's very likely there's going to come a time in the next 2 or 3 years that we're going to have to share teachers with other districts.
Back in Samanok, Jennifer Wald agrees that sharing teachers can be a great opportunity for certain school districts. But in her own experience, there are some drawbacks.
Last year, I had to work spring break because Leland and Samanok spring break did not match up. And because I'm the only shared employee, no one, it's almost like sometimes that gets forgotten.
This year, she will at least have a spring break. Well, maybe not a whole spring break because of FFA.
I got it this year. Yeah, I'm going to run a contest, but that's my fault.
And sometimes she feels torn between districts, like she's not 100% a part of either. She has to miss staff meetings moving between schools, but thankfully has co-teachers in both spots to keep her in the loop. And she feels like even though it's not a perfect system, it does increase her ability to create unique and meaningful education experiences for her agriculture students at all our schools. I'm Peter Medlin.
That's it for today. Reporting today contributed by Alex Stegman, Jane Carlson, Colin Highslope, and Peter Medlin. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Farrah Anderson. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.